In the fall of 1975, Wanda Watkins enrolled at Campbell College. Little did she know at that moment that her collegiate and professional career would last nearly 5 decades, all of which would be spent in Buies Creek. Campbell's first ever female athletic scholarship recipient, Wanda distinguished herself both on the basketball court and on the softball field, so much so that upon graduation in 1979, she was hired as an assistant coach. Just 2 years later, Wanda was hired as head basketball coach, a job she held for 35 years in a Hall of Fame career. After retiring from coaching in 2016, she moved into the administrative side of the athletics department, where she has served as senior associate AD, senior woman administrator, and interim AD. Coach Watkins will retire in May after 49 seasons of service to the university as a student athlete, coach, and administrator. Her face certainly would appear on Mount Rushmore of Fighting Camel Athletics. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is our next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with people who have made this place special over the years. I'm delighted to be joined today by Wanda Watkins. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Wanda, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
My pleasure, Stan.
Well, Wanda, let's just start at the beginning. How did all this get started? What was it like growing up in Johnston County and as a kid, and how did you get started and involved in sports?
Well, you know, I did grow up in Johnston County. I was a rural gal, grew up in the country. My dad worked in the city, but my uncles were all farmers, so I grew up working on the farm and earning money so that we could buy our school clothes and things like that. We learned really early. I think our parents taught us early, my brother and I, the value of a work ethic, and we learned that very early in life, and I'm always been appreciative of that. But I grew up in a neighborhood where it was mostly boys. There were a few girls in my neighborhood, so our yard was always full of young people that were playing either flag football or most times it was basketball. And Dad constructed a court at the house where, you know, you were able to run under the goal. We had, it was before the days of goals that you could raise and lower, but we had one, and it was well lit. And so at nighttime, it was the local place where everybody in the neighborhood in the Cleveland community would come to our house and play basketball. So I kind of grew up playing with boys and learning early on that I had to be tough if I was going to do that. And as it grew over time, even when a lot of the boys would grow up and get married, them and their wives would come back and play too. So it was just a great time all the time in our house. And both my parents were athletes growing up, and both of them loved sports. And so we were constantly going to ball games, watching ball games together, and that's really kind of how it all started. I just grew up being around it and having a real love for it.
Did playing against boys, you think that stoked your competitive fire, so to speak? Or,
well, it was tough sometimes, you know, and a lot of times some of them were grown men, and so I think it was good for me. It taught me to. I was out to try to show them that I could compete with them. And so it was a fun thing for me. It was something that I looked forward to every night. You know, we'd get out there and we'd play ball, and then my mom would come out and she'd have cookies or popcorn or something for everybody, and we'd have refreshments, and then we'd go back at it again. And it was just a neighborhood thing that I do think that with the majority of the people I was playing against were men or young men, that it was good for me because I was always having to try to be at my best whenever I was playing in order to excel against them, which brought out the competitive edge in me really early in life.
You mentioned working around the farm. What were some of the responsibilities you had? What were some of the crops you worked in?
Well, I used to tell my players these stories about when I was a little girl. I can remember picking cotton all day by hand with a bag that we would wear on our back, and then you would go and you would have your your guano sack laid out, and you would pour your bag onto the into the sack, and at the end of the day, whatever your cotton weighed was how you got paid. Can you imagine? You know, cotton's not very heavy. So, but I remember doing that as a child, and then I can remember when they would collect all the cotton and they would put them in those trailers with the high rails, and how we would at nighttime, how we'd get on those trailers and we'd jump off and turn flips and land in the cotton, just having a ball, you know, making something out of nothing, having fun, a little competition. But we did cotton, I chopped tobacco, we suckered tobacco, barn tobacco, I graded tobacco. My dad actually worked in the city, but since we lived on the farm kind of next to my grandmother, he had some land, and he had soybeans and things like that where he'd plant that, and he'd have it turn into hay, and he'd use it for his livestock. And I'm sure he helped put me through school doing things like that, where he worked, you know, 40-hour plus week in the city, and then he'd come home on the weekends and do stuff like that to help us as kids. He and my mom were great providers.
And this is, you know, these aren't jobs where you're going and sitting in a store waiting for somebody to come in the air conditioning and all that. This is physical, tiring, in the heat of the day labor, right?
Oh, yeah. You'd get up before the sun would come up, and you'd go take out tobacco, where you would go to the tobacco barn where the tobacco had, or it had cooked, and got ready to take it to the market, and you would take out tobacco, and then they'd take it for the sale, and you always knew if the tobacco sold good, the farmers, my uncles, would come back really happy, and that never hurt our paychecks. But lots of days we would get up before daybreak and take out tobacco, and then you would, after that, then you would barn tobacco. And, you know, I did all kinds of odd jobs with tobacco where we would grade it, then they came out with the bulk barns later, and so we would put it in racks and put it in the bulk barn. I vaguely remember as a child where you would bundle it and put a leaf around the top and string it. I never did that, maybe one summer or so. But that's going way, way back, and more like in the days of my parents where they did that. But as I grew older, you know, they had the stringers that they used to put it on, and then they would take it up. There'd be somebody to hang it in the barn coming off the stringer. And then later they advanced from that to the bulk barns where you would rack it. And I don't know where they are with it now, but it was a really good life. But like I said, we learned that there was value in working hard, and we took a lot of pride in earning that money. I can remember at the end of the summers after we would finish barning tobacco, how we would go clothes shopping with our money, and we'd come back and we'd lay it all over our beds, and then we'd invite our friends over to see what we were going to be wearing to school that year.
So it sounds like you almost had to have floodlights in order to play basketball certain times of the year, because it wasn't like coming home from school and then just going play until dinner time, was it?
No. And I remember one year we had we would have a garden, and we would work in the garden with our parents too, and we would put food away in the freezer that we would eat on the whole year. And we did that to my parents. We're very late in their lives. We would have a garden and help them with blanching corn and things like that. And I can remember we had a huge freezer where we stored all this food in, and then we had a big snow one night, and the next morning when we got up, our basically it was a barn burned down with the freezer and everything that was in it, the riding lawnmower, everything. And I was really young at that age, and I can remember my mom said to me that I would sit at the window and I was crying, and she asked me if I was okay, and I was concerned because my basketball had burned. And there our family had lost everything that they'd put away for us for the winter. Riding mowers, freezers, all that food, all that hard work. And there as a child, I was sitting there concerned because my basketball had burned up in the fire. So, gives you some idea at an early age how much I loved it. I was into it.
Well, tell us, Wanda, you know, growing up, we always pretend to be somebody or whatever in the backyard when you're playing in the driveway. Who were you in the driveway? Who were some of the players you were imitating at the time or emulating?
Well, you know, there really weren't women playing on TV then, so you didn't really have a lot of female role models. But I can remember watching Larry Miller and Charlie Scott, Bill Bunning, Rusty Clark, and I remember Larry Miller trying to shoot my free throws like Larry Miller and be a point guard like Dick Grubauer, who had played for Coach Smith at Carolina. We kind of grew up Carolina fans. And, you know, after you'd watch it during the playoffs and the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament, and then as soon as the games were over, I was out to the backyard. I was ready to play and put myself in those game situations, you know. I can remember doing it like the nose on my face. It was just something that we grew up loving.
And for, you know, for me, it was a baseball player and trying to imitate a pitching motion or a batting stance in a certain time. And then, you know, it was Tate Armstrong or Pete Maravich or John Lucas in the driveway. And being fascinated with teams that it felt like we heard all about Carolina and State in the early 70s. And you know, for good reason.
Yeah.
And then I was fascinated with the teams that played against them. And sometimes, you know, I wanted to shoot a corner three. It would have been a three-point shot, a corner jump shot like Tom McMillan, but I could not get it there left-handed like he could.
Yeah. Those were the days. And I used to kid with my team after practice when somebody would have a really good practice. I'd say, okay, now so-and-so's going to be our Holly Farms player of the game, because that's on ACC, the ACC basketball games. It was always who's the Holly Farms player of the game. They were always the sponsor for ACC back when I was a kid. But there really weren't a whole lot of female role models. And I can remember the first one of any notoriety in our area was Sheila Cotton. And she played at Fuquay Varina High School. And I can remember going with people from church to watch her play and keeping up with her. And I'll never forget one night I went, and she won't either, because Sheila and I are good friends now as we've gotten older. And she coached many years at Lewisburg College basketball and was a great softball coach too, but played at East Carolina. But at the time, she was at Fuquay High School, and I can remember going to get her autograph after a game one night, and she was just falling all over herself. She couldn't believe it. But she really was probably the first female role model that I can remember. And that was, you know, when I was in junior high school, because athletics in the county and in the state really went through a struggle there for a while between the time that I was a senior going from middle school, eighth grade, to becoming a freshman in high school at South Johnston. There was a big movement in the state of North Carolina that basketball was too rough of a sport for women, and that there was a big movement to outlaw it. And there were some pioneers like Robert E. Lee in the Southern Pines area was one. There were others that I'm not that familiar with, but I know Robert E. Lee was one who fought to keep women's sport alive. And it was during that time that it went from seven-person. It was right around the same time that it went from a six-person game to a five-person game. And when it did that, I think was one of the biggest turning points that saved the sport, because it made it so much more exciting. And from there, you know, we saw all kinds of advances after that.
Wanda, some of our listeners may not remember or have knowledge of the six-player game, three on one side and three on the other. Mm-hmm. When you first started playing organized basketball with girls, explain that a little bit to us.
Okay, I was in the seventh grade at the time, and at the time that I played, it had advanced a little bit. I think there was a day where it was like three at one end and three at the other. But by the time I started playing it, there were two players who were called roving forwards, and they got to play the entire floor. They played offense and defense. Then there were two players that played offense with them called forwards, who would play offense with the roving forwards when they would come down to their half court. And then when the other team got the rebound and went back the other way, the forwards would stop at half court, and the stationary guards who were at half court waiting would be defenders. So you really had specialists back in those days. You had two players that were pretty well-rounded that would play the whole floor, two that played offense with them, and two that played defense. So it was an entirely different game. And then that was my seventh grade year. And then my eighth grade year, the state of North Carolina went to five-person. And that's when things really started to pick up and change for the better, I think, for the sport. And then, you know, after that, then we got the smaller ball. Of course, there was a 30-second clock for women when I got to college that had already preceded me. So I don't know about the time that that evolved. But then the small ball came afterwards, after I got here, and then the three-point arc. And now we have all kinds of things like advancing the ball and things like that that have been added to the sport.
Tell us a little bit about some of the people that helped you along the way, your coaches, teammates, relatives, and stuff that helped you prepare to go play college basketball.
Well, I think my parents were instrumental because they worked hard to provide the things for me that I needed in order to do that. Now, I never was a basketball schooler. I never went to camp because I was always working in the summers with my uncles. And so I never really attended camp until I got to Campbell, and then I started working camp. But there were so many people along the way. First and foremost, my parents, and then my brother always, I think, made me tough because we were 27 months difference in our age, and we're still pretty close today. But we, you know, he was good competition for me, too. And then I was fortunate. I had good middle school coaches in Larry Bowman and Bill Jordan, who were very good to me. And then Bill, when I went from middle school to high school, Bill Jordan went to the high school as well for my first year, and he was my coach in the eighth grade, and then he was my freshman coach. And so I was fortunate that I went to a school like South Johnston that was, we had the pioneers like Bruce Coates, who were very instrumental in the athletic development in Johnston County, with baseball, with our entire school and the athletic program. They just did things really well at South Johnston. So when I first got there, we didn't have a gym, but they were building it. So my freshman year, we played in Four Oaks. We practiced in Benson. We played in Four Oaks. And you've probably heard me tell the story before. My mother drove 25 miles to take me to practice, 25 miles back to fix dinner for our family, 25 miles back to pick me up, and 25 miles to take me home every single day so that I could play high school basketball that year. So, yeah, I've always been grateful for that. And so we got the gym, and of course the rest was history then. And we were pretty successful. My junior year, let's say 74, we were state champions, and then we thought my senior year we're going to turn right around and do it again, but we lost out that year. But we went the year before, I guess my sophomore year, we got put out in the regionals, but my junior year we were really successful, and Tom Jackson was our coach, and we just had a nice 50-year. It's been 50 years since we won the state championship. We had a 50-year reunion back in January 19th this year. And it was great. Everybody on our team came back with the exception of one person, and we lost a manager that passed away early in life. So Tom Jackson, who coached us, was there, and still South Johnston, you know, they just treated us like queens. It was a great great gathering, great recognition for us that night, and the gym was completely packed when we walked out at halftime of the game. So they just always did things really well there. It made me proud to be at a school like that, and they continue to do that. So long about that time, I was being recruited some. David Frazier was the president at Peace College at the time, and Dr. Frazier took a big interest in women's athletics. He would come to my games and write me letters, and Norlin Finch was coaching there at the time. And then Robert Doak was the coach at NC State. He preceded Kay Yao. It was the year I graduated, the year before Coach Yao started at NC State. But I can remember getting a letter from Robert Doak where he laid it all out and told me the only thing I'd have to pay for if I went to NC State was I'd have to pay for my room key. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go because I wanted to be a physical educator. I knew I wanted to be a coach, and they didn't have that major at NC State. And a lot of people thought I made a big mistake by not going there, but I think it was one of the best decisions of my life, you know, because the rest has been history for me here at Campbell.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously the proximity, just, you know, 11, 12 miles away from Benson, and you know, in the neighboring county from where you grew up. What was it about Campbell that, besides from having that physical education mm-hmm. Major, drew you here?
I think that was the biggest thing, was the fact that I knew I wanted, by that time in life, I knew I wanted to stay involved in athletics, and I knew I wanted to coach. And I had worked, when I got to college here, I worked in recreation a few years in Raleigh with the Parks and Recreation Department, and it just wasn't something that appealed to me. And I was glad that I came to Campbell so that I could teach and coach. And Coach Peabody was the coach here, and she recruited me. And Wendell Carr was the athletic director. And they really took a chance on me at a time where women's athletics was just starting to provide scholarships. And so a lot of people say, well, you were the first full scholarship recipient at Campbell. No, I was not. I was not a full scholarship recipient. I got a little money for basketball. I got a little money for field hockey. And then the rest, I had to go out and work and officiate games. I would go to Raleigh to the Cap 8 in that conference and officiate volleyball twice a week to help earn some spending money. And bless my parents' souls. I mean, you know, they were so good to me coming up with that extra money that I needed to attend the school that I wanted to be at. But it was close to home, and I could run home and have a meal with my family. And yet I was far enough away, I kind of felt like I got away from home. But I don't think it was until I truly got away from home, if you would call 30 miles away, getting away from home, that I really appreciated the finer things in life. When I got to college and I saw how other people they weren't fortunate to have families like I had, and they weren't provided for like I was, you know, it made you really appreciate those things.
Absolutely. Wanda, I can't imagine having the president of a college sending you a letter, taking interest in you, wanting you to come pursue your academic and athletic career there. And it's kind of hard to think of that as even being part of the equation even now. You know, we hear about, you know, some of the recruiting visits and some of the inducements, and now there's NIL. You know, what was Campbell like in 1975 when you set foot on campus here?
It was an entirely different looking place. Even Carter Gym looked nothing like it does today. There weren't nearly the number of dorms. The athletic facilities were nothing like they are today. And yet it was the same kind of atmosphere that it still permeates today. It was a down-home kind of place where people loved you, they cared about you, they took a special interest in you, they wanted to see you do well. And it was a big difference maker for me at the time in my life. I'm not sure I would have survived on a campus like NC State. Looking back on it now, I'm just so grateful that I picked Campbell. But this wasn't, it's hard to describe how different it was in terms of aesthetically compared to how it is now. To me, today we almost look like a little mini Wake Forest. And back in those days, in a lot of ways, you know, our high school gym might have been bigger as South Johnston than in Carter. But then when you put the crowds that we would have in Carter, it was a great atmosphere, and it was fun. I can remember people coming in for games when they would come and recruit. We would bring a recruit to campus. I can remember the families, how their mouths would fall open when they would, you know, we'd barely make it to a game for the men when we were recruiting. We'd take them to a men's game, and their mouths would fall open when they get there to see the number of people, or when they would come to one of our games later and they would walk in and have to be escorted to find a seat in Carter. You know, those were things that were fun, and there were great and fun times. You know, when I came to school here, I have friends that folks that I developed friendships with that are still great friends of mine, you know, 40, 50 years later. And we had fun, and it was all about the love of the game, playing for the love of the game, and just enjoying it when you did it. It was just a different time, a different generation, just totally a different place.
You mentioned wanting to major in physical education and go into coaching. Who are some of the Betty Jo Clary, Francis Lloyd, some of your teachers and the coaches from other sports? Tell us a little bit about you know, what you learned from your mentors here.
Well, I learned so much. I shared my early coaching days. I shared an office with Betty Jo Clary and Francis Lloyd, two Hall of Famers here, and I just took it in. I mean, there was just so much I learned just by listening to those ladies who had been there and done it for so many years. They had so much experience, and they could bring me back to reality sometimes if I'd get on my high horse or something. And we shared an office there in the end zone of Carter Gym next to Danny Roberts. And Coach Clary was a great teacher of the game, but she was just a great teacher of the game of life. And Miss Lloyd, you know, pretty much resurrected our tennis program here at Campbell and was fantastic with that. And everybody wanted to take a class with Miss Lloyd, you know, because she was just such a caring person. And I had Danny Roberts. I had Danny for golf, one of my golf classes, and I fell in love with golf when I had Danny. And he would say to me, you know, this could be your sport. This could be your sport. He wouldn't be very proud of me now if he saw me play, but I enjoyed it, and I learned a lot from him. And Coach Peabody was a competitive badminton player. She played competitively, and she was good. She could beat anybody that stepped out onto the court. And that was something that I developed a love for. And later in my life, I played a lot of badminton and tennis. In fact, I liked tennis so good, I began to skip class to play tennis, and it got me a little bit of trouble when I was a freshman. But she again was a great teacher too. And I learned so much from those folks. And Dr. Williams was our president, and you know, would come to all of our games. Coach McCall was at all the games. Frank Upchurch was a person that helped me, and as I began to my coaching career and try to advance the program, I would go to Frank, and he would have a listening ear and help me do the things we wanted to do in the program. He would try and help me get there with it, and just I could just go on and on and on. I mean, I worked with some with some great coaches. You got BJ Cleary. I was assisted with her, and then Danny worked in his basketball school when he was doing the basketball school. Then worked alongside Billy Lee, Robbie Lang. I mean, it's just I've been around some quality people over the years, and I've always tried to learn from everybody that I was around and exposed to the game, because what's always amazed me is that different philosophies and different ways of doing things, and yet people can still be successful. And so I've always just tried to take a lot of that in and learn different ways of doing things and try to be creative about teaching the game and the game of life with kids.
Wanda, you mentioned a story you shared with me back a couple months ago, and this year's Hall of Fame inductee, Barbara Fox, who was a teammate of yours. And you told me about the fact that she was incredible in martial arts, and that she could jump up and kick the chandelier in the lobby of Treat Dorm. Share that with, what was that like to see? I mean, and Barbara's about 5 foot eight, maybe?
Yeah.
About 5'4", 5'5", yeah. Probably.
Yeah. No, again, that's one of those longtime friendships mm-hmm. with someone that we were in the same dorm in college. We played on the same team, and Fox was small but mighty. You know, she was a tremendous softball player, and still is so talented and so strong, such a physically strong athlete. But yeah, Fox was, she was into that and was good at it. And we were there in the same dorm. None of us really went home. We'd go home for a little bit and then come back on the weekends. And we had a big pool table down in the bottom of Treat Dorm, and we'd play pool on, you know, till wee hours in the morning. We'd all get down there and play pool and just have a good time. And a lot of us still are in touch with each other. But it was good to see Barbara go into the Hall of Fame. She's definitely a worthy, worthy candidate and a tremendous athlete here.
Wanda, what do you think, especially in those formative days, before Campbell moved to Division One, you know, women's sports, if you think about in the decade between middle school and when you graduated from college, mm-hmm. 3-on-3 basketball to scholarships, and then less than a decade later, Campbell's Division One and basketball. What were the strides that you saw in within the program, within the game?
Yeah. Well, when I first came to college, we were in the AIAW, mm-hmm. which was Association of Intercollegiate Athletics for Women, and everybody was lumped in there together. So it wasn't uncommon at all for Campbell to play state and beat them in basketball. Mm-hmm. It wasn't very lucrative for women then. Everybody was lumped into the AIAW. And then as the NCAA started to recognize championships for women, then Power Fives like NC State and Carolina and those guys moved into the NCAA, where there were more opportunities for women. It was more lucrative. And then at the time, we moved from AIAW to NAIA for a few years. And I should have dug up all my notes, because I have this somewhere, when I used to go and speak to different women's groups here in town and tell them about the history of sports here. But we were NAIA for a while. And then I can remember going as a coach. I believe my first year or two, we were in the NAI District 26. And then we went from NAI to Division One. And I can remember our first year in Division One, we won 19 games. And thinking at the time, we were scared to death because we didn't know what it might bring. But it was such a different era from then to now. We were just beginning to see women be given those opportunities, and all that started when the NCAA recognized championships for women. And I know you've heard me tell this story before, Stan, but I can remember my first Final Four going. My first Final Four was in 1989, and I flew. We won our first championship, and I can remember talking to someone at the university, and they thought that I should be able to go out to the national convention, particularly since we had won our championship that year. And so I flew out to Tacoma, Washington, and I was just overwhelmed at how the sport was beginning to grow. The number of photographers that were at events, and just it was on a national platform with television and things starting to come along. And I can remember the first Final Four that I went to, where I sat down in a game and a little girl came and sat down in front of me and had on a Rebecca Lobo jersey. And that's when it really hit me that now these little girls have female role models, and things are really beginning to change now. And now you look at even from then to where we've come now. I remember in 2000 when we went to the NCAA tournament and we played at Duke, I can remember Brian Bowman coming to interview me when we got there. He was with one of the stations in Raleigh, and I can remember when he came and interviewed me, but that was the extent of it. We played in the national tournament and made school history, and our game was not televised. And then the next year, it wasn't televised at all, in part or anything. It wasn't televised at all. And then the next year after that, in 2001, they started televising the four region games, even in the first round, but they'd go from one to the other, where you saw a little bit of each one of those games. And now, of course, it's all televised. And even like the WBIT, some of that will be televised now this year. And so I think that the exposure that television brought to the sport was vast. I think scholarship opportunities at the time when I came in 75, being the first female recipient of a partial scholarship, to it being everything being fully funded now, and scholarship opportunities, TV opportunities, the media. Now you have the Caitlin Clarks of the game, the Angel Reese's. You have those kind of players like a Caitlin Clark, where I saw yesterday when the bracket came out that within 30 minutes they sold every one of their tickets for the first round game in less than 30 minutes. That is huge. And the sport is really growing in notoriety now. And I think we may see the same thing happen in the WNBA when she makes that move in there next year. And because she's so well known now and people are following her. But I'm rambling, but I just think it's like night and day.
Without a doubt. Wanted to take us back, 1979, you're graduating. Were you thinking about teaching high school, coaching high school? Tell us how it turns out that, you know, you transitioned from college senior to, in a couple months later, you're an assistant coach.
Yeah, I was working with the Raleigh Parks after I graduated. I worked with them in the summer months, and I was working with the Raleigh Parks, and I can remember my dad picked me up one day for lunch. He worked in Raleigh as well, and I told him, Dad, I don't think I want to coach in high school right now. I think I want to go back and get my master's. And at the time, Coach Clary had already given her grad assistantship to Coach Candy Fox, who was one of my longtime friends, became one of my longtime friends. And so I called Coach Clary, and Coach Clary let me come back, and I helped her for free that year. And I would work on the sides, and then my parents helped me again. My parents helped me again come back and work on my master's that year. And then the next year, Candy graduated, and I got the grad assistantship. And then the next year, Coach Clary decided that she was going to get out of coaching and just be a full-time teacher. And so Candy and I both competed for the job. And we were best friends. You know, we coached together. And I think Campbell, I got the opportunity to come, perhaps probably because I was a Campbell grad, undergrad and grad, had played here, was familiar with the place. Nonetheless, I got the job, and I can remember the first person to campus that night to congratulate me was Candy Fox. So we remained the best of friends, and then she went on to Clinton High School, and she coached Tanya Caldwell, Tanya Sampson, Danielle Parker, all those gals, won all those state championships at Clinton and just developed a dynasty down there. And we remained friends until her death. And so I'll always be grateful to Candy for supporting me so much, you know, when she found that I got the job. A lot of people would have lost a friendship over that.
Wanda, what was it like when you're February of 1979, you're in the huddle, you've got the uniform on, your teammates, you're on the bus or in the van with the team and in the cafeteria, and then fast forward to the following October 15th, and then you've got the whistle around your neck.
Yeah.
And many of the players on the team would have been your teammates 6 months later. How did you make that transition from peer to coach?
It was a little bit hard at the time, but again, my friends like Rhonda Johnson, Rhonda Muller at the time, who were you know, good friends of mine. I played my senior year with them, and they were freshmen. Rhonda and Cindy Parker, Cindy Biggerstaff, those gals were, you know, they were freshmen and I was a senior, and then the next year I was coaching them. It was, they were better about it probably than I was. It was a transition, and I knew that I wanted a career in coaching, that I was going to have to draw a line, and that I could no longer just be their best friend. I had to be a little bit of a person of authority, and so I drew the line, and along the way, I lost a few friends that ended up coming back once they grew up. And so you wouldn't see that happen now. Again, it was a different era. It was a different time in women's athletics. I probably wouldn't see somebody become a head coach at the age that I did, 21 years old or whatever I was at the time. So,
especially in an established sport like basketball.
Yeah. Yeah,
the field hockey player at UNC that's the national player of the year and then hired immediately and then leads them to the national championship as a 23-year-old this year or whatever. I mean, that is unheard of, but it's not too far off what Campbell, how they invested in you.
Yeah, I remember talking to Wendell Carr when Coach Clary decided to go into full-time teaching. I can remember talking to Wendell Carr and going to his office and saying, you know, would you think I was crazy if I applied for this? And he told me, he was like, no, you're the person we want in this position. And that, you know, he had so much faith in me. Never forget it.
He gave me my first job here as well.
Yeah.
So It's not. There are so many people that have come through here that have treated us like their own, and then it's been up to us, as time has grown, to try to somehow step into some of their shoes.
We say it all the time. You know, we are the Wendell Carrs, the B.J. Clarys, the Harry Larches. We are those people now in our students here.
And they have to be. This concludes part one of our conversation with Wanda Watkins. Join us in 2 weeks on Tales from the Creek when we continue our chat with Campbell Hall of Famer Wanda Watkins.